Shout out to our sponsors, King's Peak Coffee Roasters. At King's Peak, they take coffee seriously. Their beans are sourced with utmost care from sustainable farms worldwide, ensuring that each sip is a celebration of exquisite flavors. From captivating blends to captivating single origin roasts, their coffee selection promises to tantalize your taste buds and elevate your coffee game to new heights. King's Peak staff embodies the spirit of hospitality and passion for coffee. With smiles that brighten your day, they're always ready to guide you on an unforgettable coffee journey. From bean selection to brewing techniques, their knowledgeable baristas will happily share their expertise to help you find your perfect cup. King's Peak is committed to making a positive impact on the entire coffee supply chain. With every purchase, you're supporting farmers and artisans, enabling sustainable practices and empowering communities around the globe. Together, we're nurturing a brighter, more inclusive future for everyone involved. Whether you're a coffee aficionado or a curious newcomer, King's Peak is your welcoming sanctuary. Explore their wide array of coffees, accessories, and gifts, and let King's Peak help you find the perfect fit for your unique taste. They're not just a coffee shop, but a community that embraces the joy of coffee and human connection. Join us at King's Peak Coffee Roasters, where coffee dreams come true. You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, family, I'm here in the heart of Salt Lake, and what is this called, Brian?
Downtown Music.
Downtown Music. I had no idea this place exists, by the way, gentlemen. It's next to proper Main Street, and holy cow, I had a all-wheel drive into the parking lot. It was in my Prius.
Yeah, it's hard on the Jetta, too.
It was epic.
I don't want to talk too much shit about the building owner, but they're kind of a slumlord, if you couldn't notice.
Derelict school for children.
Yeah, right?
I liked it, though. It's cool. It gave me some good old school concert vibes, you know? Anyway, Brian, I'm here with Mr. Brian Best, one of my dear friends, and we are talking about, we talked about your episode, Mr. Brian Best episode, and you were a part of a band, still.
Still.
As long as we're,
I think
right?
So.
Still?
I think so.
So far.
As of about 30 minutes ago, he's still a member of the band.
Okay. So the band is called Hulking Bully Giant.
Yes.
And Brian, you have your members of the band here. So go ahead and introduce your band members, please.
Yeah. So with guitar and lead vocals, we have Cam. He was waving.
That's me.
Can't see
This is Cam.
And then with bass and backing vocals, we have Mike.
Hello.
What's up, Mike?
And then I play the drums.
Mr. Brian Best.
And I do backing vocals.
So you guys, I'm assuming, have band names or band personas. Is that true?
Brian kind of created them for us.
Okay.
They've never really been used.
They've never really been used, except for in our bio that's in a few places online.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what my name is anymore at this point. Is it The Maniac?
It is. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're Mike the Maniac.
That's fair.
I'm still Cam Squatch.
Yeah.
Cam Squatch. I like
that. Yeah. I think I'm Brian Damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's your guys' pseudonames, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We never use them, but they're out there.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. So we're here to talk about, we're going to assume you heard Brian's episode, but we were talking about Brian's life, and he started pairing music with beer, and it was a pretty cool, a good adventure.
I thought it was a neat concept.
Yeah. We went down kind of big points in your life, about five of them, and we paired it with beer.
Yeah.
With a memory.
Yeah.
So gentlemen, I've been invited here today. Because I've invited you here today to pair beer and or a beverage with your music life and your music jump. So, Cam, I want to start with you. You brought a beer today.
Yes.
I want to know what the beer you brought, and let's give me the story. Give us the story for why you brought today's beer.
I brought PBR. It's kind of just an old standby. Musically, I grew up listening to a lot of punk and metal. My mom raised me on Misfits and Ramones and The Clash, and my dad raised me on Judas Priest and Motorhead and Iron Maiden. So PBR is just kind of, in my eyes, it's kind of the beer of choice for poor musicians that are trying to make it. It's cheap, but you know, it's good. I personally love it. It gets the job done. If you're trying to get banged up, it'll definitely get you there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that I picked PBR for that reason.
Well, you guys have some to pop open and try out.
Yes. Yeah.
Can we drink in this room? I feel like it might blow up.
No, we're pretty safe.
Big Mike, look at you. So you guys have no, at it. Safe. So for me, it's you know, Pabst is one of those beers where it might get a ding on it because it's, you know, I sometimes see it as like the lower class beer, but it's a classic. I mean, I've crushed a few dozen in my day.
I mean, I don't think Pabst is a good beer, but I like it.
Yeah.
You know,
so. I heard a rumor that they have you guys ever seen a Pabst commercial or Pabst marketing?
Yes.
Yes, you have.
I actually am a big Pabst Blue Ribbon fan.
Okay.
I actually have old magazine ads under glass from like the 40s.
Holy cow.
And some like coasters that I found on eBay that are, you know, potentially from the 50s and 60s. There's no way for me to verify that.
Right.
But yeah, I have like a whole Pabst thing under glass at home because it kind of, to me, I don't know, and this might be kind of stealing from Cameron a little bit, but to me, it is the beer of struggling poor ass musicians. Mm. And I feel like it's also of the cheap beers, it's probably the best one. That's coming from me. The first time I ever drank beer, it was Natural Light that had been in the trunk of a car in July for like a week and a half. And
dear Lord.
And it was like drinking hot soup broth. It was, I swore I was never going to drink beer again. And so then my very next experience was drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Which is like a nine like, shining armor.
Dude, this is so good. Like,
yeah. How old were you when you drank that car beer?
I was pretty late bloomer. I think I was probably like 19.
Okay.
20. I'd only ever drank once before that, and it was some dudes I had been skating with had a jug of orange juice, which was mostly vodka and a little bit of orange juice, and I didn't know it, and I was about 14, and that just made me throw up because it was, again, hot vodka orange juice, a hot ass screwdriver, like that's the worst. So
your first two experiences have been pretty shitty.
Yeah, dude, with a lot of things.
But I like that. So, Mike, I want to stick with you then. So, you had the Pabst. Where are you from then, originally?
I grew up in Tooele, which is, you know, in the 90s. And if anybody knows anything about Tooele in the 90s, it was kind of the methamphetamine capital of the planet. Pretty rough town. Back then, I think there was about only like 14,000 people, but I think they only had like 9 police officers for 14,000 people.
Wow.
Sort of Wild West, teenage. I grew up a punk rocker. Didn't fit in because, let's be honest, Tooele at that point in time was mostly rednecks. And so there was, you know, a lot of fights, a lot of hazing, a lot of dudes trying to throw me in dumpsters and shit.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
So why music? Why did you start chasing your passion and your hobby with music? Was it a saving grace? Was it a...
No, mostly, like, I've wanted to be a musician since I could stand up, probably. I actually, you know, started out on some other instruments, got frustrated because I was, like, too small to, like... Like, my mom put me in piano lessons when I was a little kid.
Cool.
And I didn't take to that because I wanted to write my own stuff and I could hear it in my head, but my hands couldn't do it because I was so small. So then I went to trumpet and then I figured out, you know, I was probably 8. And then I was like immediately figuring out how to play movie scores by ear. And, you know, but I always just wanted to play bass guitar, even though I didn't know I wanted to play bass guitar. I would hear bass guitar in music and stuff, and I would know I wanted to make that sound. I thought it was just another guitar, which it kind of is, but it, you know, and I didn't figure out it was bass guitar until I was about 13.
Okay.
When I went to the second Warped Tour ever. Fuck, I'm old. But yeah, and I was standing in front of the stage, right in front of the bass player of the Bouncing Souls, and I heard that sound coming out of him, and I went, that's it. That's what I want to do.
13 years old.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So did you start picking it up after that?
My parents, well, particularly my mom, was very religious, and she just always told me that, you know, playing any kind of rock music or guitar was a one-way ticket to hell. And so one of my older sisters actually bought me my first bass guitar, my first bass rig.
That's
when I was 15. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's been pretty much a major focal point in my life ever since. You know, it's just every time I get on a stage with these guys, I just think to myself, like, this is the only thing I've ever wanted to do in my life.
That's rad as hell, Mike. Man, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. So, Cam, how'd you find these guys? We gotta go back to you now.
Oh, shit. So I started playing music like this pretty late. I actually didn't start playing guitar till I was 26. I'm 34 now. I met Brian through a friend I went to junior high and high school with. And we met because of our mutual interest in hockey.
Okay.
I grew up playing. I still play. Traveled all around to do it. And then I had this friend named Adri. And she and I liked the same team, and they were in the playoffs a few years back. I think it was 2013, against the Blackhawks, which is Brian's team. So, yeah, they won that year, and he still rubs it in my face. It was 11 years ago.
We haven't done anything good since then.
That's true. So we went to, I don't even know what it's called now, but it used to be the Republican on State Street, just up around the corner. We went to watch a game together, and she was like, hey, I have this friend named Brian, you know, he's a big hockey fan, loves the Blackhawks, and they're playing each other. So, I was like, yeah, bring him down. So Brian and I started chatting. We figured out we both really loved music, and I had just started playing guitar cause, my best friend had committed suicide just a few months prior, and I just kind of needed an outlet, and I had this old kind of Stratocaster, style guitar in the basement. So I was like, that's it. So I just played it. Started getting good enough to, you know, write some real rudimentary stuff, some punk stuff. And, Brian tells me he's a drummer, and I'm just like, you know, we should jam. And, really he came over to my dad's basement where I was living at the time, set up his drums, and we just started writing music, and we still play with some of those songs today. And, eventually we got, to a point where we were adding other members and people were coming and going, and then we kind of hit a point during COVID where we were just kind of like, you know what, like having other members isn't working. Brian and I were really the only two that were committed to the project. So we carried on as a two piece, and, we played one show at Hopkins Brewery. we hit the first note of the first song, and like eight people got up and walked out. They were not into it at all. And, and it's a heavier song. It's really dark. But it was Halloween time, so it was still appropriate. And then we played that show, and we were kind of shopping around for a bassist because I very much like weight in my music, and the guitar wasn't doing it. And then by some miracle, Mike just messaged me on Instagram and was like, hey, I saw your video on Facebook of your show at Hopkins.
Everyone walking out at Hopkins.
And he's like, do you guys want a bassist? And I was like, Yeah, fuck yeah, absolutely. So Mike came, he learned some of the songs.
Can I interject for a second?
Yeah, please do. I might be telling it wrong.
So, you're from your side, that's correct. Some bass player somewhere here locally made a Facebook post in this, like, find a musician group or something that I'm a part of. And he was like, I'm a bassist looking for a band. And then I see this comment from this band called Hulking Boy Giant. And I went, what the fuck is this? And so, I'm in two other bands, not at the time I am now, but my primary project that I was in, we were going to be taking a break. You know, our drummer was going through some stuff physically and whatever. And I wanted something to keep my chops up. So I was just kind of like perusing, and like, I watched a bunch of your videos, actually, and I was like, I can get with this. Like, this is, it's pretty raw, but, like, I could see, like, the potential of what the band could be, and they were looking for a bass player. So then I messaged you.
Yeah. So
I messaged the band Hulking Boy Giant, but initially it was the name. I was like, what the fuck is this, dude? Like, come on.
Oh, the name is ridiculous, but I love it. So yeah.
It caught my eye.
Yeah. Where did the name come from? I've never asked this question. Actually.
So it actually came from a podcast that it's kind of defunct now, but I used to listen to it pretty religiously, called The Boogie Monster. And it was a comedian named Kyle Kinane and his buddy, who was another comedian named Dave Stone. And they did this episode about like hauntings in Savannah, Georgia. And they were talking about this guy. I can't even remember the name, but he was like 17 and he was like 6'8", just this huge guy. And they're describing him. And one of them just goes, was he a hulking boy giant? And I was just like, that is the name of a punk band. So we took it. It was actually the third name we'd picked, and we settled on it. It's stuck ever since. And
yeah, he texted me immediately after you heard that.
Yeah.
Got a new name.
But
okay.
Yeah. So we kind of ripped it off, but you know, it's never been an issue. So now the podcast doesn't even function anymore. So I don't think it ever would be. And you know, I'm grateful for it. If I hadn't been listening to those guys, yeah. I never would have gotten the name. And I love it. We get a lot of compliments on it. So
yeah. So when you guys found Mike, or I guess Mike found you, did you guys feel like now you guys were complete as a band?
I mean, for me, it was pretty much immediate. Mike messaged us. We sent him some really raw, shitty clips of our songs. He still got them too. But he learned the songs. We had him out to a practice, and I mean, for me, I felt like it was an immediate fit. I wanted him in the band immediately. I can't really speak for Brian, but that's how I felt. I was pretty psyched when he joined.
I felt pretty rough the first few practices because Brian shreds on the drums, and I was like, I have never played with a drummer like this before. And the way I naturally play bass, which is totally fucking wrong, I'm supposed to only play the kick hits, right? But I play every drum hit, and I'm like watching Brian behind this massive kit. And I'm going, how the fuck am I going to do this? You know, yeah. But Brian's made me a better bass player.
Mike's made me a better drummer. Cam's made me a better drummer.
Mike's made me a much better guitarist. And Brian has absolutely contributed to that. I feel like we all kind of get the best out of each other. Yeah. We all have this love and respect for each other. So nobody wants to be the weak link. We all want to do really well, not just for ourselves, but for the other two guys in the band. Right. It's really a cool dynamic.
Damn.
Yeah.
This is beautiful, guys.
I love these guys.
No, but it's really cool.
We're
to see
all
this
best
dynamic.
Friends.
Yes,
in this
we are.
Band.
Yeah. Very much.
We absolutely
I get
are.
The brotherhood in yeah. here. It's really cool. In this 3'2" room in yes. here.
It's little tiny, but hey, it beats my dad's basement. So
I love it. I love it. So yeah. Cam, you brought a beverage, right? No, that was Mike. You brought a beverage. We're on Mike.
Yeah, I already kind of talked about mine. It's also a PBR. And actually, I'm such a deadbeat dirtbag that I didn't even buy it. Brian bought it for me. but I do have a cocktail to talk about. I was going to bring it, but I didn't have a sealed bottle. And I thought, you know, on the off chance we do get pulled over, really want open container.
Well, we good job. By
so,
the way.
But my cocktail that I typically like to drink at shows is Bullet Bourbon and Sprite.
Why is that?
It tastes really good, and like the lemon and lime of the Sprite against kind of the more kind of like savoriness of the bourbon is super refreshing. Like I can be, it sounds completely wrong, and it probably is. I can be like, feel like I'm drunk as hell, and then I order, while we're on stage, I'll just be like, hey, bartender, can I get a Bullet Bourbon and Sprite? And they'll like bring it out, and I'll take a sip, and it's like, I'm right as rain. I can keep going. I can play as long as we want, because it's like that refreshing to me.
Fascinating. Brian, when you watch these guys, you're seeing they have passion for music, and they have passion for the specific drink.
Yes.
So as a person who makes this beverage,
yes.
craft beer, what's your take on these two?
Well, I mean, the beer that I brought is also PBR.
You're a brewer, dude. Come on.
Hey, it's Pabst Blue Ribbon for a reason.
Okay,
that's fair. Was the best beer in the world.
At one point.
At one point.
Yeah, like 1866.
was it 1882, 1883, Chicago World Fair?
Wow. That, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
1844 established in Milwaukee.
Yep. Yeah. And go then Brewers. At the Chicago World Fair, it was the best beer in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I picked Pabst as my beer because if we are going to hang out and drink before a show, we're all usually drinking Pabst. So I do like that. I think it's a very accessible beer. Hmm. I mean, money-wise, flavor-wise, or anything like that, approaching it from a brewer standpoint, it is a very, I mean, like it's a, as I call it, a quote-unquote good shit beer, but the technicality behind it is really intense. Like it's an American light lager. It's a very, very specific style of beer. And I tried to make my own American light lager a couple months ago, and it just, I didn't clean something properly. So now I have 5 gallons of shit beer. Like shit beer, not even good shit beer.
Also, if I can interject for a second, the fact that you called this beer accessible, that yeah. is a big deal in this beer representing our band.
Yes.
Because we play punk rock, right? Punk rock's probably the most accessible form of music for musicians. You know, like there, you can kind of point to any musician who like started in punk rock and then went and did other things. And they're like, I just heard punk rock. And I was like, I could probably do that.
Yeah.
You know, exactly what
that's
I did.
Kind of how, yeah, yeah. See, that's Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the stories punk rock of beers.
Yeah. The bands that start in the garage are like the Ramones that didn't even know what they were doing and then became the Ramones.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I think it's a wonderful introduction to drinking beer. I think we're a great introduction to punk rock, which is kind of our sound, but at the same time, we are very unique.
Yeah, we're a bit more than a punk rock band.
Yeah.
What's that step that's more than just being a punk rock band?
I think it's the three of us, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like, yes, we play punk rock, but we kind of play our very own unique brand of it that isn't just punk rock. Like Cam has a really strong background in metal music, as does Brian, but completely different kinds of metal music. Brian's more Iron Maiden style. Cameron's more what?
Sludge, Black Tusk, Red Fang, Kveller Talk, those kind of bands, really, really raw and heavy.
And then like my major influences are bands like Bad Religion, NOFX, Lagwagon, kind of the skate punk brand of punk rock. And then you meld those three things together and it becomes this amalgamation of all three kinds of music. And it, like, I feel like it's really cool. That's one of the things I love about this band is it's really unique and we don't really, like, I've been in a lot of bands in my life and a lot of bands kind of set rules for themselves. Like, this is our style. There's like no rules in this band where it's like, you know, Cam will bring an idea or Brian will bring a drum beat or I'll make up a chord phrasing or a rhythm or something. And then the three of us together turn it into a Hulking Boy Giant song.
Fascinating. This is really cool.
To like layer it over beer or brewing, water would be just the general aspect of music. But then I feel like the three of us would represent the hops, the malt, and the yeast because we're all having different contributions to it where it's the malt is the base, but there's the sweetness that comes through it. And then the yeast is what's active and gives you the fermentation. And then the hops are the random aromas or nose that you get out of it. And I feel like through different songs, we're all playing those different roles, or sometimes we're all those different roles. So sure. It's, I mean, we have some songs that Cam's doing the intro, or it's very guitar centered, and the riffs that Cam's doing are very much the focal point. We have some songs that Mike does the intro, or it started with a bass line, and that's where it grew from, or there's random drum patterns, or it's lyrics that we wrote and brought to it. So it's all different ways that we're contributing kind of like different ingredients in making a beer.
That was beautiful. But because it's, I see how I see it is I go around introducing and hearing local artists within the fermentation scene. So I interview you guys, but when the craft is beer or spirits or, you know, kombucha, sake, all that stuff. But you guys are a different kind of artists. So we all have something in common. And so watching Brian bridge the gap, because this is something that deep down I wish I was. I wish I was a musician. I have the hair for it.
You certainly
long,
do.
Long, curly hair. But I don't have the patience for it, I guess. I don't know. I never had that. You know, I was gifted a guitar, but I've played it maybe a dozen times ever. And that's just me trying to, like, YouTube it, right? But watching you guys really feel your music and feel your art through your instruments and sharing that, I'm sitting here like, damn, this is why I do what I do, right? Because you guys have your own stories, and you guys are, man, this is awesome. Did you guys bring any other beer today?
There's other beers in the fridge, but they were brought a while back.
I did bring a cocktail.
I want to hear this.
Okay. So I brought
Arnold Palmer.
A Arnold Palmer, a hard Arnold Palmer.
Oh my God.
But to be specific about it, I was at the dog days at the fairgrounds a couple months ago, and we just went to get an Arnold Palmer, and the lady running the little drink kiosk, whatever, you know, I went and ordered it, and she said, okay, but I heard this from someone else, and before you open it, you're supposed to, like, kind of mix it, and then it actually tastes better and different, and the flavors have mixed better. And so I was like, yeah, sure, why not? What am I going to lose? $5? And so she did it, and it worked really well, and that's just stuck with me ever since. So I wanted to bring the Arnold Palmer, and then I just mixed it as I was talking about it. And I feel like that's a fun way to represent our band, because a lot of people know what an Arnold Palmer is. But then I feel like we, kind of like what we were just talking about, how we may have started as punk rock or like horror punk, but just through our very own nature, we've turned the genre or the music that we play on its head. And we're constantly mixing things and changing things. So I wanted to bring a concept that a lot of people know, but then you mix it and it's a totally different experience with it. It tastes different or it sounds different. And I feel like that's what we do as a band.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Very well placed.
I have no idea where to go from there. That's beautiful because it makes so much sense to me. It makes sense that I can look at you guys and be like, oh, it's another punk rock band. Okay. What's so special about you guys? Right. But then the depth you guys bring, I'm like, okay, I'll look like, Mike, when you're saying, oh, the name, like, I'll give him $2. I'll look into it, right? Yeah, so now right? It's like, okay, I see this. Because, like, I look at the Arnold Palmer, I'm like, dude, I don't want to drink that. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to smell it. But now you're saying, like, oh, I'll fuck with it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I see the band. I hear the band. I'm like, all right, I'll fuck with it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I think there's another can in the fridge behind you.
Oh, pass. If you want. I mean, I'll get one after. But
I'm going to try and do the mic thing.
So that was pretty good.
Nice.
But, yeah. Gentlemen, so I don't know if the first time and the only time I've seen you guys was... Brian, we talked about this. It was 2 years ago, a year ago at the Policy Kings Festival in the middle of the sun. You guys are playing in the direct sun on that little stage. It was like a platform, I guess, but we call it a stage.
It was a loading dock.
Loading dock, yeah. And I was saying, that was the day I thought Brian Best was going to die. But I remember you guys jamming out, and you guys were just raw, pure. Like, you guys were having a great time, but I don't remember seeing you guys afterwards. Did you guys hang out afterwards, or did you guys just bounce?
I know I hung out. I think you, Mike, headed back up to Salt Lake pretty short afterwards.
I hung out for a couple hours.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we hung out. My girlfriend at the time, my fiance now, we spent the night in Cedar City, so we hung out all night.
Damn. What do you guys remember about that festival? That specific
The sound guy?
The sound guy.
The sound guy and the aftermath on my poor pale Scottish Danish ankles.
I need to hear this.
So it was really hot that day, right? And we were playing at like the hottest part of the day.
Yeah,
you and
were.
Just beating down sun on the stage. And I typically wear, you know, I have a uniform, I guess, of just black skinny jeans or just skinny jeans in general. And I was really hot, so I like rolled up my jeans. And I was wearing a pair of like Toms, right? So no socks and, you know, the whole nine yards. And in that, like, what do we play? 45, 50 minutes?
Yeah, 45.
My left ankle was the color of a cooked lobster after. And it got big, nasty blisters on it and like the top of my foot. And I work in construction for a living, so like I got to wear like boots and all that shit, right? So about the next 4 days of work was just like every time I would like walk, like left foot would land and I'd just be like, ow, ow, ow. And it all got nasty and peeled and blisters popped and it was brutal, but worth it because we pissed off that sound guy much.
We really pissed that guy off.
Like, what was his name? Jeff?
Sean.
Sean. Fuck Sean. And yeah, he was just mad because people were more into us than his little lovebird project that he was doing with, you know, some girl he wanted to fuck and didn't want to fuck him.
Right. Poor guy.
Yeah, he was something else.
Yeah.
Were we halfway through our second or third song and he comes up to the stage and starts to try to talk to me like while I'm singing, playing guitar to tell us we're too loud.
He used the words, come on guys, you're fucking killing people here with the way you sound.
You're killing everyone out there.
That's the point of what we do. Yeah. We're not murderers, but you know, if you want your face melted by loudness, we're the band.
Yeah, we definitely go for kind of a wall of sound effect.
Well, I think you guys turned live. Heads for sure. I mean, you turned my head, you got my attention. You got the attention of all the brewers that were there.
Yeah.
And you got the attention of the people there, the crowd, which I'm assuming that's what you want to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely
I didn't see this Sean guy, but I didn't see anyone get pissed off because of it.
No, nobody was pissed.
I just saw everyone having a good time.
He was pissed because, you know, people were like dancing and bobbing their heads and whatever and drinking their beers to our music. And when he was playing, nobody paid attention to that guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what other kind of vibe would you want? So I'm glad you guys created that scene. And that was my, besides Brian almost dying, that was my best impression of you guys. So
yeah. He was rough.
We were talking about, you know, craft beer and that Paul Skeens Festival. Have you guys ever thought about going, have you played besides Hopkins at other breweries, other beer fests, other beer gigs, spear gigs, craft beer week?
We played at Tailgate Tavern.
Yeah.
We did play at Tailgate Tavern.
And we play at,
I mean, most of the venues we play at are bars.
Yeah.
We've played a couple that are more music than bar, but they still have bars in them.
Like where at? If I were to look up you guys' website, what's some venues you're playing at?
Well, right now we only have one show on the books, I think, and that's at Ice House. That's our album release party. Oh,
two. Murphy and the Giant's gonna party with us in November.
Also at the Ice House.
Shout out to the Ice House.
Yeah, love the Ice House. That was where we played our first show as a three piece too. So.
When was that? How long ago was that?
That was September 2021.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's dad, who is not a punk rock fan and in his 50s, thought we were fucking awesome, by the way.
I mean, my dad loves our band, and it's not just because I'm his kid. Like, he legitimately loves the music. So
I feel like a lot of people talk about, like, oh, we're OG fan. We're day one fan. I'm like, it's Wade.
It's Wade,
He's
for sure.
He's literally been there since the beginning.
Wade has had to put up with our bullshit since 2013. And can't say enough about how much I appreciate that. I mean, like I said,
Oh yeah.
2 or 3 years we practiced in his basement while I was living there and he was just like, yeah, whatever's cool.
Oh yeah. Wade's so great.
Yeah.
So you guys brought up the Ice House. So why is the Ice House it's important because you guys played there for the first time, you three. But then we just talked about an album release party. Is this the first album? Is this the newest album? Talk to me about this release party.
It's the first full length album. So about May of last year, we also put out a 6-song EP. With just some of our oldest songs. And then we've just done a lot of writing since. And we felt like the time was right to put out a full length. So this one's double the length of the old one. And I mean, I think I can speak for all three of us when I say I'm super proud of it. We're all really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Ice House is nice because for me, it's close. It's a block away from my apartment. But it's just kind of that whole, like, it's kind of back to our roots. Like, I almost feel like we owe it to Ice House and to ourselves because that's where we played our first show as this iteration of the band, which, you know, if I have my way, will forever be the iteration of the band. So it's like when we do things like this, I always want to go back to Ice House. Because they do well with their sound. We always do well there. They always have people. And I said, it's kind of back to the roots. You know, it kind of takes you back to that special place. It's a little magical to be cliche.
Nostalgia for you guys.
Yeah.
It's so, almost like a PBR of a venue. It's super accessible.
It is.
Yeah.
I love that. I've never been to Ice House, so I will be there for you guys' release party.
Cool. You're missing out. It's a really dope venue.
And that's 22nd, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Will that be a Friday or Saturday this year?
That is a Friday.
Friday night?
Yes.
At Ice House. And then you guys will release your newest album, which is a full 12 songs, you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
And when so that's release date. When it does get released, how and where can we purchase said album?
Ooh, surprise.
So I don't know about purchasing, but we will be on all the streaming platforms. And actually, what's the date today?
Today,
the 2nd.
September 2nd. We actually, the record just came out this morning. So I got impatient and I asked Cameron, I'm like, I'm sick of listening to these tracks in Google Drive, man. like, let's just, fuck it, let's put it out so people can listen to it.
So we can go to Hulking Boy Giant on all the platforms. We've been
listening to it. It's there.
Also, if you listen on Apple Music, I'm pretty sure the lyrics are already there.
Yes.
We're kind of still waiting. When did we put out our EP? Like 2022?
Yeah, 2022. May 2022.
We're still waiting for the lyrics to show up on Spotify.
lyrics are there now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay,
EP
cool.
EP has lyrics.
So on our new record, if you want to sing along at the show, you know,
the lyrics are there.
Watch Apple Music and learn the lyrics, and we would love for that to happen.
Yeah,
that would be
How are you guys
unreal.
Blowing this up? How are you guys getting the word out there on the street that the 22nd is a big day for us?
Primarily Instagram.
Yeah.
We post a lot on there. It's usually just show flyers and then some little recaps of our shows, but you can definitely find the information on Instagram and on Facebook.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Ice House has created an event page for the album release, so that's, I mean, Cam made a poster for it that's super badass.
And, I want to see this. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we're playing with the Goonbats and our really good friends American Humor.
Cool.
It's going to be a ripping show.
Yeah, that's three good bands.
It's one of the best lineups I've been a part of, actually.
It's really solid.
Yeah.
Goonbats and American Humor are both just full of good musicians. So. Yeah. It'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a nice segue for the next part. But on that note, gentlemen, let's take a little break so we can take a little breather. Sound good?
Yeah.
That works.
For sure.
We'll be right back. Shout out to our sponsor, Sugar House Distillery. Handcrafted from grain to glass, Sugar House has been grinding for years to bring us products that are quality over quantity. Just to name a few, their single malt whiskey, rye whiskey, which is our weekday jam, their Boilermaker series, which is a rotating collab within our family, and their canned cocktails, which are so damn good and great for any to-go adventures you have this year. Located in most liquor stores across Utah, or just head over to the distillery located on 22nd 12 South, West Temple, Monday through Friday, tell them we sent you, and they'd love to give you a tour and possible tasting. When you think Sugar House Distillery, think local and made with love. Until the next spirit, my friends. Shout out to our sponsors, Clearwater Distilling. Utah County's only distillery is turning heads and quickly making a name for themselves. From whiskey to vodka, their unique innovation transforms the norm with incredible products like their Rene Armagnac, which is an aged French Armagnac with an American rye whiskey twist. Literally one of our favorite showcasers. Or their Scandalous, which is not like Fireball. It's an actual whiskey with quality cinnamon without any sugary taste. Also, Clearwater teams up to do a monthly cigar pairing where you come and get educated on how to properly smoke a cigar while pairing with Clearwater's lovely spirits. For more information, head to clearwaterdistilling.com, hit them up on all social media platforms, or just message us and we'll get you started on the right path. Open 7 days a week, even on holidays, Clearwater is a must. See you there. Until the next spirits, my friends. All right, boys. So, like I was saying earlier, you guys are local artists in the music scene here in Salt Lake. Do you guys know a lot of the artists, like other bands here in the community as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's, and when we first, like, were comfortable playing with each other and we had songs down, at first we were just kind of reaching out to venues and just trying to get gigs. And then if you play, you know, maybe two or three shows and you don't suck, which I don't think we do, then like you build kind of a relationship with other bands, and then it just kind of becomes, oh, this band's playing, and then like they had a lot of fun when we played, so then they reach out to us. So like, I mean, American Humor, we've played with a handful of times, and I mean, we know the guys really well. They're really, really good dudes. We have a blast whenever we play together. So it's kind of going back and forth of like, we have a show, we ask if they have availability, they have a show, they ask if we have availability. So it's, yeah, you just kind of like make friends.
Kind of like bring your homies kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
That kind of goes back a little bit to my other band, Longside. We, you know, Longside played, I think it was our third show ever. American Humor actually opened for us, and we had never met them before, but they instantly grabbed my attention and have, I mean, they're my favorite local band. I'm wearing their t-shirt right now, and those dudes are all incredible musicians, and they write incredible songs that are just, you know, sneering at the concept of existing. Yeah. But in a humorous kind of way at the same time. So
that's really cool.
I love those guys. Also, Dude Cougar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, love Dude,
Dude Cougar. Dude Cougar has become kind of a major fixture in the Hulking Boy Giant world.
Yeah.
Those guys are great. We've played several shows with them. Also, and on a side note, Noble Pest is also one of my favorite local bands. They're super unique and very cool.
So like that, are there some, no pun intended, but some giants or some huge heavy hitter players in the local music scene that you guys kind of, everyone knows? Because like I know in the beer world, there's like some of those, like, if you want like classic style beer, go there. If you want like the atmosphere, you go there. You know, it's like a band that just says, hey, if you want this, they do it the best, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a handful of those bands locally. When I'm listening to music, I definitely lean more towards metal. So there's a lot of really good metal bands here. I mean, you've got the first one that comes to mind is the Otolith. They actually have two violin players in the band. Sick. And just really big, epic music, really, really loud in your face, but really, really good stuff. And I'm a big fan of Swarmer and Cult Leader. But I mean, going back to punk, just to kind of piggyback on what Mike was saying, American Humor is far and away, like, not just one of the best local bands, but in my eyes, they're one of the best bands I've seen live, period. They know how to work a crowd. They know how to play their instruments. Like, you, as a musician, you can kind of pick out when people make mistakes on stage, and I never see them make mistakes like that. Mm. Just, they're just solid in everything they do. So I really can't say enough good things about American Humor. I love those dudes.
So what do you guys think about the Utah local music scene? It's pretty awesome. Is it still growing? Is it still young? Is it old?
I think it's a mixture of young and old. I think there's a lot of kind of young up-and-coming bands, just kind of across basically all genres, but then there's still like the old heads like Racist Kramer. They've been around forever, and you know, they're an incredible band. Like, the first time I ever heard Racist Kramer was actually in this building. They used to have a room here, and one of the bands I was in had a room over by theirs, and I was like leaving practice one night, and I heard them inside their room, and they were playing a Wilhelm Scream song, and it sounded like Wilhelm Scream was in that room. Like, they're so good. I really look up to those guys a lot.
Yeah, Racist Kramer is and they've a really
been,
good band.
They just super strong DIY, you know, they've never, I don't know, sold out, I guess, or like changed what they do for to please other people. They just, you know, straight up super fast technical punk rock.
And yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to kind of that technicality or people you guys look up to, because I know in the beer industry, I know I feel comfortable enough where I can go ask for help. I can say, or I have some really close friends where if I make a beer that I think is good, but there's some technicality flaws inside of it, they'll, you know, put me to the side and be like, hey, like I would do this. Or like, here's, so is there something like that in the industry where like, hey, I like this bridge you guys played, but like maybe if you put it here or change that, is there some type of this, not hand holding, but this critique, kind critique in the industry for you guys?
I mean, honestly, for me, most of the advice I get, and the reason I feel I've come as far as I have as a guitarist, have come from Mike. Mike will never admit it, but he's a very talented musician.
Mike's music theory is through the fucking roof.
It's insane. And I honestly, 90-95% of the advice I get and the tips that I get come from Mike, and I'm very grateful for it, because I wouldn't be, I mean, I don't consider myself this virtuoso guitarist, or even like, I don't shred. I don't really solo very often, but just coming as far as I have from never having played a guitar till I was 26, I owe a lot of that to Mike. So he's been an awesome resource. And I also have friends that play that will give me tips and tricks here and there, just kind of to get by with certain things. But, at least for me, most of the kind of nudges in the right direction come from within the band itself, which is really, really cool.
If you guys were to get, or I guess Cam, if you were to get nudges outside of the band, how would you like to be approached in that way?
Kind of the way you described it, you know, like, hey, I hear what you're doing here. It's fine. It works. But, you know, maybe try this next time and see how it works for you. Like, I have really bad anxiety. So I, if someone's in my face and, you know, points out a flaw, I'm going to implode. So Mike's very good at approaching it like that. So.
Gotcha. Mike, what's someone, when it comes to getting critique or hearing advice, how do you take it, or how do you like to receive it?
It kind of depends on the advice. I'm a pretty busy bass player. I play a lot of notes. That's just who I am as a musician. And some people think that's cool. Some people, you know, tell me that I should just shut the fuck up and play root notes. And so
I don't like those, I mean, people. Don't do that.
I am purely myself as a musician. And so if somebody likes what I do, I'm just like, yeah, that's cool. But if they don't like what I do, that's okay too. Like, you know, I've experienced some mean mugging at the front of the stage from other bass players. And, you know, if that's how you want to live your life, fine.
You don't give that energy, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, I play what I play. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't really think I play bass guitar properly, but I play bass guitar like me.
Yeah.
If somebody were to approach me and be like, hey man, you should like maybe try this. Yeah, I'd try it. But
at the end of the day, you're gonna do you.
Yeah. Bass players are an interesting breed of human being, I feel like. And I feel like there's a lot of bass players who view everything as a competition, and that's not where I'm at all. I'm just, you know, I just get up there and express myself how I choose to express myself. I will say that there's a lot of bass players in the scene that I've seen play, incredible bass players. And I actually try to be that guy who's like, oh, you want to do this? Well, try it this way or whatever. I'm usually more on the end of, like, I'm very much an all boats rise with the tide kind of guy.
Yeah.
Even across bands, across, you know. And so if I have bass players ask me questions about how I sound and whatever, and I just tell them, you know, what I do, you know, start with everything and then take away. By the way, there you go, bass players, if you're listening to this podcast, there's my only advice for you. Other than that, be yourself.
I like that though. It's unapologetically you.
Yeah.
Brian, same thing. I mean, I know you've been playing the drums for quite some time. You've seen a lot of drummers, you know, a lot of drummers that's been professional drummers, probably some local drummers that you look up to.
Yeah.
When it comes to aspiring to be better and better in your craft, how do you do it?
I mean, like Cam said, a large contribution has come from Mike. When Mike first joined and we became a three-piece, my drum kit's name is Dan. On all of its travel shells is just the name Dan. I bought it from a guy named Derek. Derek bought it from a guy who was not named Dan. That guy bought it from a guy that wasn't named Dan. We don't know where the name came from, so we just call my kit Dan. When we first started as a three-piece, my kit was massive. It was overkill.
It was insane.
I wondered.
It
if
was
you
like
were
three times the
story.
Size that it is now.
Yeah, my mantra going in and out of shows as we were playing was just too much shit. As I'm just making trip after trip with everything. I mean,
why don't we talk about what your kit used to be? How many drums did you have?
14.
Dear Jesus.
More than double what you see.
Clearly, yes. Wow.
Yeah.
What were you going for with 14 drums?
Oh, Phil Collins. Mm. Yeah.
I thought Neil Peart.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things I ever said to Brian. I walked in here and I went, who the fuck do you think you are, Neil Peart? And yeah. He goes, yep.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the kit is very much modeled after one of Neil's old sets. And then I try to go for the Phil big 80s sound. And it was just a lot. It was a lot to work with. It was a lot to move around. And then just one day, Mike was like, hey, how about you don't?
He was like, you don't need all this stuff.
Yeah.
I told him, I was like, let's downsize your kit by half and yeah. see what happens. And he was willing to go that route. And what happened?
I feel like my playing shot through the roof. I got a lot tighter. Part of it was with less drums, I had to be more creative instead of less creative. There's more freedom and less restrictions. And I understand that. And I know that now. So I feel like my playing got a lot better. My creativity of the fills or the patterns I was creating got a lot better. And so this is now Dan's final form or his ultimate form. Actually today we just wrapped up practice. Today was the first time that I've ever played on Dan with all of this. So normally I only have my hi-hat and two cymbals, but then Mike got me another cymbal. So I'm at three cymbals again. So this is the first time that I have played Dan in his current configuration with this amount of cymbals. And especially for being in a punk rock band, for any drummers that are listening, it's a jazz setup. So all of my stuff is offset to the side, which is very traditional for jazz kits and like house lounge bands. But we play it on kind of the opposite. There's the turtle side and then the rabbit side, which is also how a lot of people describe my drumming. And I used to only have the turtle setting or the rabbit setting. It slides a little bit more now, but I think, yeah, Mike, to go back to your question, Mike has been super helpful. Alex in American Humor, we actually played a show together and we were just talking shop and equipment. And I was talking about the cymbals that I use and the cymbals that I really, or the cymbals that I used to use and what I really liked. And he was telling me that he got these brand new cymbals and he really likes them. And I was like, oh man, those are really neat. And he was like, yeah, you want to try them out? So he let me use his cymbals for one of our shows. And they sounded so good. They were really, really nice.
What were they?
I think they were Zildjian K's. Which
are really nice.
They're so nice. They're really, really heavy, and they just have a really nice resonance and ring to them. Carl, who's the drummer in Dude Cougar, is... you got to meet Carl to understand Carl.
That guy is an old head with a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
He's been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
He's a very good drummer.
Yeah, he's really, really cool. He's a really nice guy, so... The more we've played with Dude Cougar, the more I've got to talk to Carl. And it's not so much like, oh, I really like how you played that song, but maybe try this fill.
Yeah.
At least for me, it's a lot of talking about the equipment and the hardware that we're using. What stands, what pedals, what cymbals, what heads are you using? Like, what's the wood in your drums? Things like that. It's a lot about the hardware, because I think that's kind of on the surface level what helps make a drummer a drummer. But then it's, you put a drummer behind a kit, and then no matter if it's a huge kit or a small kit and big cymbals or tiny cymbals, how they play and their style is going to come through. So it's always nice talking to people and, you know, like, do you use Alpha Brewing equipment or do you not? You
right.
know, do you have a mash press? Do you not? Things like that.
Yeah,
so
because I'm trying to correlate the two when it comes. I'm listening to you guys sitting here. You guys are obviously professionals or experts inside of your craft, right? I wouldn't say... You guys are the next Pearl Jam right now. You're not making fuck you money. I understand that. But you guys are creating your own art with your own instruments and fine-tuning your art and craft.
Yeah.
With what you have, the knowledge you have, the knowledge you've been given, the knowledge you're willing to lurk and grow upon. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting here listening here like, holy shit. Like in the beer world, as a beer maker, I'm like doing the same things. I can sit here and nerd with the beer maker about what kind of hops to use or what kind of malt and how hot did you get that malt and how much water did blah, 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 and just nerd out. And you guys will sit here being like, tomfoolery, what the fuck is going on, right? Because you guys are sitting here, ziggy zigs, AX, you know, symbols, that goes over my head. But I can, you guys understand that that does make a quality sound.
I feel like there's a lot of crossover in that between brewing and music because, like you said at the very beginning, it's both, it's all artists,
yeah,
right? And artists learn from each other and, let's be honest, copy each other.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're a brewmaster and somebody makes a beer that's just like a beer you made, like, that's like, that means that person thought your beer was the best beer at the time, right? Cool. So it's, you know, like I said, there's a lot of crossover between that.
Yeah. Right, because I feel like every note you guys have played has probably been played before.
Oh, yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
So every beer that I've made, 99% of the time, I'm guaranteed it's been made before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's how you, it's your take and how you want to be presented as your art and your craft. And so on that note, you know, I like to do a lot of collaborations with, you know, I like to bring in other brewers and brew with them at their facility with, you know, in my facility, vice versa, blah, blah, blah. What does a collaboration look like within the band, within the a show or within the local art scene?
I think, I mean, kind of going back to when we were talking about our album release party, that's on September 22nd at the Ice House.
The Ice House. Plug.
Yeah.
Hey, what time is it?
Doors are at 8.
Doors are at 8. Admission's $5.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely
That was a genuine question. I didn't know what time it was.
I definitely answered with another question. Doors are at 8? That was a question mark, not a period. But I mean, like Cam was saying, like the lineup that we have for this show, the Goonbats and American Humor and us, I feel like you could collab and make like a super group, like a Cream band or like a Me First and the Gimme Gimmies or whatever.
Or Them Crooked Vultures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Damn Dirty Vultures. That's another band that we didn't mention.
Those guys are great. Yeah, shout out to those guys.
Oh, yeah. We played with them a handful of times. They rip.
The Bird Band Bros are super great.
But like you could make a super group, but I also feel like the other fun collaboration is the lineup of the show.
Okay.
Because you don't want to have, you don't want to have like, and this is not to say that this guy's a bad music, but like one of my really good friends, Dave Birchfield, has like an Americana folk band. It's Dave Birchfield and the Fire Guild. And they're really, really, he's a professional musician. They're really, really good. I don't think we should play a show with them. That would be,
that'd be weird.
That'd be a hard left.
But at the same time, you don't want three or four bands that all sound exactly the same.
Yeah.
And so, like, where we booked this show, we kind of consciously found bands.
To complement you guys?
Yeah, to complement what we do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we also complement what they do.
Cool.
Yeah. And, you know, and as a whole experience, what's the word I'm looking for? It's cohesive, but different enough that you don't get bored.
Yeah. What was the show? Was it the Christmas show at Kamikaze's that we did with Pigeon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it was Brad Reiser, who was a solo act.
Solo acoustic.
Incredible player, by the way.
So good. So good.
If anybody listening, if you like folk music, listen to Brad Reiser.
So good.
One of the best locally.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Also just a really great dude.
Good guy.
So he played, and then we had Pigeon, which was kind of folk rock.
I think they're a little more in the vein of indie, but yeah they're also a very good band.
Yeah, and so there were like five or six. It was the Christmas benefit show. There were like five or six of us, and it just kind of progressed, and it was, you know, Brad Reiser and Pigeon and us and Heavy Bucket Band, which is, I kind of feel like, very ZZ Top adjacent.
They're very blues based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And Top Shelf Creeps, who were really cool dudes.
Those guys are incredible.
They were great. And so it was just kind of like the progression of moving through those different musicians and their different styles.
Yeah.
It's kind of like moving through a beer flight where you start with a light beer and then you work your way to the dark beer. If you're going to have a bunch of different acts you start with, you know, the really good solo acoustic, a little bit more indie, a little bit blues heavy, some punk rock, some real punk rock. And it kind of moves through the night. It moves with the crowd, and like the tone of the music flows all together really well.
I appreciate you liking it to beer. I'm like, oh, it makes sense now.
Yeah.
No, but I understand that, because you don't want one. You want to give a barrel-aged stout the first thing and then a light lager afterwards.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I see that.
Yeah, your palate's shot. And I mean, like when we played at Hopkins, people were not expecting us to come out and just...
their faces off.
Yeah.
No, have you been invited to Hopkins since?
Nope.
Nope.
Nope. Probably never will.
That's because your guitar sounds like a chainsaw.
My guitar does sound like a chainsaw. It's a little gnarly.
It's so great.
Yeah, they were pretty bummed about it. But
what's some places you guys haven't played here in Salt Lake that you would love to play at?
Huh.
Kilby.
Yeah, Kilby would be cool.
Kilby
would be fun. I've seen a lot of good shows there.
Yeah.
Really small stage, but it's really intimate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a lot of fun, especially for us, because we definitely like to interact with the crowd, and crowd's right on top of you there.
Yeah, and the energy that, especially with like the lineup of the songs that we have now, we have kind of our own theme song, and then right after it, on our album that is out on all major streaming platforms that you can listen to now, is about a really shitty trip I had down to Daybreak and how creepy I thought Daybreak was. And that I feel
What's
like
Daybreak,
Daybreak is, I feel like if Edward Scissorhands and Invasion of the Body Snatchers merged and then existed in Utah
as a neighborhood.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's this planned development community. All the houses are the same. The grass is really green, but because it's built on old mine grounds, you can't plant anything because it's toxic. The HOA is super intense. It's the last stop on the tracks line. So if you get off the train, it literally sings Dyna Blow Your Horn. And there's never anyone at the track stop. So it's creepy as shit.
It's very Stepford Wives.
Yes.
For those who have never been there.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, there's an episode of The X-Files where Mulder and Scully go spend some time in a perfect neighborhood.
Yes, I know the one.
It reminds me of that episode.
Yeah, yeah. That's the
shout out Daybreak.
Yeah, yeah, great place. I actually have some really good friends in my D&D group that live in Daybreak.
Some good restaurants.
Yeah. But like we have that song, and that I think that rips. It's got a really good intro that builds a lot of energy. So if we were to play that at Kilby, I think as soon as like we go through the intro and we hit the first note going into the verse, I feel like the whole place would just explode. And I think that'd be a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
As far as venues go that I would like to play, I would like to play more house shows.
Oh, yeah.
I love house. I'm very old school. Like, I want there to be a blurred line between the band and the crowd, those, and just super hot and sweaty, and
like at Paul's at King's Fest.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Like the more hot and sweaty I get, the better I play and the more fun I have, cool, to be honest.
Yeah.
Also aside from that, I would like to play more shows at Aces, because that place is very intimate. And when you play a show at Aces,
you know, I love Aces. My other band has played Aces probably close to 10 times. I mean, on the venue thing, honestly, I can't really think of any, because when we first started getting gigs and kind of making somewhat of a name for ourselves, there were two venues that I really wanted to play, which was the Urban Lounge and Metro, just because 9 times out of 10, if I'm seeing a show, it's at one of those two venues, and I've always loved them. But we've kind of achieved that goal. So we played them both within just over a month of each other. And so, I mean, I'm always down to check out a new venue. There's lots of good places to play here. I've liked most of them. But I don't really have any that I'm like, I need to play there. Like, right. I don't really feel that way anymore, which is kind of nice.
So, but what's some goals, you have, Cam? Cause you're kind of like the leader of the band, I'm assuming, to a degree. I mean,
I guess. Yeah.
So what's some ultimate goals you have for Hulking Boy Giant?
So when Brian and I started this, I didn't really want to set really any goals. Mm. Cause especially when I started it, it more was an outlet for some, you know, emotional trauma I just experienced. And I just met Brian and he immediately became a good friend. So, really at that point, it was just like, I just want to make songs that I like with my friends. And really, that's still the goal for me. You know, I'm not trying to get a record deal or, you know, go on tour or anything like that. That's just not appealing to me. But like what we have now, I mean, that's always been the goal and we have that. So it's kind of just to keep on doing the same. And I certainly don't want to get stagnant. I love writing music with these guys. I think when we write, we bring out really cool stuff in each other. And I just want to continue more of that. But yeah, I mean, as far as big goals, there really aren't any.
I like that.
I really just, it's just a passion and I just want to do it. And
it's a like vibe,
I
said, passion, yeah. Lifestyle.
These two guys are two of my best friends in the world. And I want to keep the three of us together as long as we can and just keep writing music that we like. That's that, really homie. It.
Mike, as one of the idols in the band, I know you.
I love that.
You know your way around the strings, so, and you have a good ear. You have a good passion as well. As an aspiring, passionate musician, what's some goals for yourself as a musician that you want to see before you hang up those strings?
Well, that's a big question. I just want to keep playing as long as I can.
Hell yeah.
Like, you know, obviously it's something I love to do because I'm in three bands. I love playing music in Hulking Boy Giant, and I appreciate the ability to bring ideas in and have input. I've kind of already achieved my goals I have had as an adult. When I was a kid, I just, you know, all I ever wanted to do was be in a touring band, but you know, I'm 40 years old now, like that, I don't want to go on tour either. and I've done that in other bands. It's almost a therapeutic thing for me to be in this band. You know, I can have a rough week and feel like shit, and I come in here and I plug my bass in and we start playing, and there's a kind of catharsis that happens for me in this room. Also, going back to, you didn't know this place existed. I didn't know this place existed until probably 2017. It's a really good, as shitty of a building as it is.
I mean, it had a high quality bathroom.
It's super conducive to creativity in here. And when I walk in here, into this room, in this building, you know, it's like, it's freedom for me. It's freedom from everything else that's going on. I can come in this room and just be 100% myself with two of my best friends. And like, that's really my goal. And like I said, I've already kind of achieved that.
I love that, Mike. I love that for you. And I love hearing that because it's kind of going the same tone with Cam. I just want to make music with my friends.
Yep.
It's the best thing in the world.
I mean,
it's making music is never like I've been making music for a long time, and like financial things or fame or whatever, like that's never really entered into the equation for me. Probably because I'm not like a businessman. I'm a terrible businessman, good creative, terrible businessman. I've just always wanted to, you know, express myself, even if the crowd has no idea what I'm actually saying with my playing or my song or whatever. It's cathartic for me.
Thanks for sharing that, man. That's awesome. Ryan, when it comes to, you're in the beer world, so you kind of speak my language a little bit, but then I'm seeing the other artist side of you in this world that I'm just in awe. I think this is really cool. I feel like every time I see you, you're always smiling. You're always happy, and you go both feet in any adventure or endeavor that you partake or you enter yourself into.
Yeah.
What's next for you, man?
Probably playing at the Ice House on September 22nd.
What time again?
Doors are at 8.
$5 a ticket.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, if I, and we've kind of talked about it in the band, like, I have a very hard time half-assing something, or just even, like, if it's a hobby or something, it's still something that I take very seriously, and I'm always going to commit as much as I can and put as much of myself into it as I can. And I mean, it's taken me a long time to get where I am with my hobbies and passions, but also professionally. And I feel like I now have those environment. I mean, like Steven and Cody and Ross and just everybody at Bewilder, like it's, I'm always smiling because I found a job that I finally enjoy and that I appreciate, but it's also a work environment that I feel valued and I know that I'm valued. Mm. And I mean, you've met Steven. Just, I think the worst thing I've ever heard Steven say is, I just don't like that man.
I don't think that's ever come out of his mouth.
But he's just, he's the nicest guy. It's so funny. And then, I mean we've talked about it. Like, we're all best friends. I mean, we all love each other very much. And it's just, I mean, I have my Brianisms, and I feel like I don't let my guard down very often. Like, there's the surface level weird that I am that I feel like a lot of people know. But then, like, randomly during practice, when I just make my random sounds, or like I say words in a weird way and like a weird accent, or like some weird made up language is like a Brianism. I do that specifically here at Bewilder if I am the very last person and no one else is around, or if I'm at home and Amanda just has to deal with it and then the dogs and the cats just go away. Like, it's, this is very, like Mike said, like, this is a very, very safe and comfortable and freeing space for me. So it's hard not to be smiling when I'm here, even if I'm beating myself up, if I'm having a hard time nailing a fill or figuring something out. Like, we're all so comfortable with each other and supportive with each other that, like, if we're getting down, or if we're getting in our own way, or if we're getting in our own head, like, we take time to talk to each other, and like, it's very, very nice. And I feel like that helps foster the creativity and just the support and the trust that we have that makes us who we are and makes the music that we make. So it's, I mean, I'm always smiling when you see me because you see me at the places that make me really happy. So yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, it's, they're two passions of mine, and it's really nice that I found people to be around and an environment to be in where I respect and love everybody that I'm with, and I know that they respect and love me as well.
Fuck yeah.
I think it's been more than 30 minutes since we started this episode, so I don't know if the vote's gone through, if I'm still in the band or not.
You're good
so far.
But time will tell, but you're good right now.
Watching you guys be these creative artists, I'm noticing something that I wish was in my field a little more than you guys have. You guys get to create music, which is beautiful, and I think every single human being on this earth can, what's the word I'm looking for? Connect to? Like, everyone can connect to music. Music is just this universal language. But in order for you guys to make that music and make it well, you have to be very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you really do.
And that's, you guys, whether, I'm assuming it's uncomfortable to be that vulnerable, but especially in this room, I bet you three have been the most vulnerable with you three other men. And, you know, it's just in our society, we kind of shy away being vulnerable. And I wish that I can take what I've learned in this room into my own craft, into my own environment, and be like, hey, it's okay to be vulnerable, and I'll support you because I feel like you'll support me. So thanks for being an example for me, guys. Like, holy shit. Like,
I'm glad we could be. Yeah. Yeah. Well, wasn't anticipating that, but I'm glad it happened.
Am I still part of the band?
Yeah.
My 30 minutes are up.
You're good,
so far.
Man.
Yeah. No, but gentlemen, I mean, shit. You guys have, man, like, Brian, I think every time I'm going to bring you on more, you know, you and your crew is all the time, because I'm learning so much, and it gives me a different perspective in being an artist. And thank you for sharing your band. Mike, Cam, thank you guys so much for having me here in your space, in your hallowed grounds. as though how shanky this place is.
Did you use the bathroom that said, what does it say, like
Wienermobile or something? Or
oh no, you were in the other one. Okay,
definitely there's one that says like Wienermobile bathroom is the way to go.
Beware all who poop here. That door doesn't lock.
Yeah,
yeah.
Knock that first. Too.
That's a good one.
Yeah, not that one. But gentlemen, is there anything I can do for you before I leave, or anything I can do to help you and help the band promote you guys?
Just come to the shows.
Yeah.
Come to the shows, have fun.
Tip
your bartenders when you go.
Follow us on Instagram if you want to know when shows are happening, at HBGSLC.
Yes, that is correct.
That enunciation was real nice.
Nice.
Well, I want to make sure that they hear it.
Yeah.
This episode sponsored by Pabst.
Oh, please.
You can also buy merch if you want to. Okay, that definitely helps us out.
Oh yeah, online and at shows.
Just at shows right now. We actually are we're dropping a new line of shirts at our next show. We've got the stickers. That's about it for now.
Big show coming up then.
Definitely contribute to further shows and more merch down the line and more records. So
yeah,
no obligation, but we always appreciate it.
I love it, gentlemen. Thank you so much for letting me be here. Like I said, if there's anything I can do to help you, I don't know what I can, but if there is, just let me know, yeah?
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And on that note, until the next studio, my friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. Find us on Instagram at @_Tastemasters, Twitter at @TheTastemasters, or on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, DM us for any questions, or leave a review. Tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.